Blog Talk Radio.
This is Cody Diener, and you're listening to False Count Radio.
All right, ladies and gentlemen, welcome to False Count Radio. As always, I'm your host, the Pacific Coast Player, JT Evans, alongside my co-host, as always, the Outsider, Andrew Carluck. Andrew, how are you doing?
I'm doing pretty great. Just got a nice little weather going on here, so a great interview, so, you know, life's good.
Yeah, don't talk to me about weather. It's raining up here in Portland, Oregon. But, you know, our guest tonight is actually down in Tennessee, where I hear the weather is wonderful right now. And I'd like to welcome on the line with us USWA and TNA co-founder Jerry Jarrett. How are you doing?
Just fine. Glad to be here.
Now, we've got a bunch of people in our chat room and via email that have sent us in some questions. We're going to allow people to call in if they've got a question for you as well. At 718-664-9835, but if you don't mind, let's go ahead and get started.
All right.
Now, growing up, were you a wrestling fan? If so, who'd you look up to?
A guy named Tex Riley was my favorite. You know, I cheered for him every Tuesday night at the Hippodrome. I was kind of a different kid. I liked the bad guys, except for Tex. I loved the Fargos, Jackie and Don. I loved the Greens, Don and Al Green. And, of course, you know, later on in life, I had a chance to work with these guys. And that was a really big deal for me to be from a fan sitting at ringside and then get to wrestle against and work in a business relationship with these guys that I looked up to so much.
Now, was wrestling your first career choice? If not, what was?
I'm sorry, I couldn't hear that.
I said, was wrestling your first career choice? If not, what was?
We've got a bad connection. Was wrestling my first what?
Career choice.
Oh, no. No, I was, I went to Peabody College to become a teacher. And when I started the interview process, I found out I was making as much in my part-time jobs as they paid teachers, which I thought was sinful. So I went to work for a bicycle manufacturing company as a purchasing agent. And up to that time, you know, the wrestling business had just been like a part-time job, so I could make some money in the summers and while I was going to school.
Now, we actually have a caller on the line who has a question for you. Caller from the 706, you're on the line with Jerry Jarrett. Go ahead with your question.
Now, I hate to shake things up, and I hope it's not too controversial. First, good evening, Mr. Jarrett.
And good evening.
I don't want to get rumors started, but I think you started them nationwide. People are talking. I'm surprised this wasn't their first question out of the gate. But is it true? What I've heard, all the way down here in Savannah, Georgia, and I want to be your manager if this is the case, but you stepping back in the ring with Jackie Fargo.
Yeah. I answered Jimmy Cornette's wife was kind of expressing her displeasure at all the people that would friend her on Facebook so they could ask Jimmy for a job. And so I wrote to her and said that I would just have to take a chance on her wrath because I wanted to ask Jimmy. I'd been talking to Fargo, and we wanted to get back into the ring as a tag team. And
did
the
you
only
imagine
difference
the
was in...
Could you imagine the numbers on the ratings on Raw when you and Jackie Fargo stepped foot in the ring? Vince hadn't seen numbers like that since the 90s.
Well, I don't know what I'm going to rating it would be, and of course, as you know, I just did it. I'm not sure I could climb through the ropes. But
come on now.
It got a lot of talk. A lot of people had a lot of fun with it. Somebody wrote that we could be the Grey Bombers.
Well, I just want to call and shout out to you. I know you started that as a joke, but now I'm thinking it could be a little more serious than you think. I think there's still, I know, I'll tell you what, if anybody wants to take this thing seriously, get in touch Jerry Jarrett, offer him the best deal imaginable, and we'll see if he jumps on the, I think Kenny Bowen says he wants to do it over at OVW.
Oh, well, yeah, Kenny, but you know, I don't know if Kenny would pay me enough. Do you think he's a shady character?
He would pay you, Jerry, he would pay you in coupons to the buffet over there at the Golden Corral.
All right, well, I could get my money's worth.
Listen, when you come to Savannah, come see me. I'll just sit back and relax and listen. Thank you for everything you've done and continue to do, and can't wait to see what happens in the future because I know you're not done yet.
All right. Thank you for calling.
All right. We have one more caller on the air with us. Caller from the 978, you're on the air with Jerry Jarrett. Go ahead with your question.
Hey, JT. How you doing? Mr. Jarrett, my name's Mark. I actually had, this may be a three-part question. We'll try to keep it short. My first question is, and I hope I'm not getting too far into what you'll probably be talking about later, but when you did the co-promotion with Vince McMahon back in the early 90s, and you brought Vince in as a heel-type character, was there any kind of plans to have Vince actually participate in the ring?
Well, let me give you the backstory on that. I was working for Vince. That was, you know, during the time of the government coming after him over steroid distribution.
Right.
And so in working with Vince, I made the comment one day at the risk of his wrath that I said, Vince, you should get in the ring because you are the most natural heel I've ever been around. And instead of him getting mad at me, he laughed. And he said, are you serious? And I said, yeah, I'm serious. You have natural heat, just the way you present yourself. I said, now, you know. I said, I know what a sweet guy you really are, but just the way you come across, you would draw a whole lot of money. And then, you know, that opened up the conversation, and he said, you know, I've always really wondered how it would be. So I said, look, you don't want to do it up here, but down in Memphis, we're kind of still a secret, and why don't you come down there and try your hand at it? And that's how it all got started. And Vince turned out to be one of the best talents I think our business has ever had.
Okay, great. And I guess the second part of my question was, when USWA was running hot again, early 90s and such, did the fans ever grow weary or get tired of the fact that it would always, they'd bring in a big name from WWE or such, and Lawler would drop the strap to them, and then eventually maybe be a month or two later, that it would always kind of be the same repeating cycle that Lawler would drop the strap, win the strap, drop the strap, win the strap. Did that ever, the fans ever get kind of tired of that fact, and did it ever hurt the USWA's business for knowing kind of in ahead what was going to happen?
Well, I'm not sure they knew in advance what would happen. Our area of promotion had a history of changing the titles with some regularity. Now, the difference in us and today is we would always go back to the same people. In other words, Jerry Lawler was the, as everybody knows, the basically the champion in our area. And he would lose it on occasion, and but generally he would win it back. So, I mean, the only gauge we have in our business is at the box office. And the box office said that they did not get tired of it.
So the fans, they did not care. They wanted as much of Jerry Lawler being, you know, the hero in that area, that no matter who Jerry Lawler went against, especially if it was a WWE guy, it would still draw a tremendous gate for you guys. And so it was always a fair bet to have Jerry Lawler in the main event, I'm guessing.
Yes, yes. They Jerry was kind of like the Dallas Cowboys to the city of Dallas. I mean, you know, he was our local hero. And, you know, I don't think they got tired of him at all.
Okay, great. And I'm going to wrap this up. I'm sorry, I didn't mean to cut you off, Mr. Jerry.
No, that's all right. Go ahead.
Okay, and I guess my last question is, we all know, yeah, Jared is to your area, like Flair is to the Carolinas, but about TNA, what do you think TNA's future is now? Do you think they can stand a chance as a national promotion, or as a lot of people think, do you think they maybe have to change the entire infrastructure of their company to maybe become a national player in terms of competing with Vince McMahon?
Well, here is my situation. I was talking in a business meeting earlier today, and during a break in it, they asked me, and I have a vested interest because I have three beautiful granddaughters that it would impact them very negatively if TNA went under. So when I say my prayers, I hope for them to turn things around and survive. With that being said, I am surprised at the I'm surprised at their survival this long with their business philosophy. And so, you know, I hope they turn it around so that they will survive. I don't know if they will or not. It's not a business model that I think if I had an opportunity to go in business again or start another company, it's certainly not the business model that I would use.
All right, great. Thank you, Mr. Jared. Thank you, Jared. I'm sorry. Again, I'm cutting you off. I'm sorry.
I hope that isn't skirting your question.
Oh, you absolutely did. And I think maybe, you know, with the talent that they have, they could really get something going. But like I said, I think maybe, you know, they just have to make some very important, you know, office moves. And I think there could be a good wrestling promotion because we definitely need an alternative to what WWE is doing now. And thank you, Mr. Jarrett, and thank you, JT, for having me on, and I appreciate everything.
Thank you for calling.
Okay, we'll get a little bit more into TNA a little bit later as well. Now, early in your career, Jerry, we were talking about him a few minutes ago, you teamed with the fabulous Jackie Fargo. What were your feelings on Jackie then, and has your relationship changed at all over the years?
I saw Jackie in the Carolinas. I went to a fan fest kind of thing, and Jackie and I, it's exactly like that we were in the Memphis dressing room the week before, except we're both, you know, old-timers now, but... No, I love Jackie. He's a great human being. I owe a lot of the success that I've had in this business to him.
Okay. And you were actually one of the first wrestlers to ever compete in a scaffold match. You know, what were your thoughts going into the scaffold match for the very first time?
Oh, I was watching television one night, late at night. I couldn't sleep. You know, I don't know if I was thinking about business or what it was. But anyway, I was up real late at night. And I guess you'd call it a C movie. It was two notches below an A movie was on. And it was these warriors fighting in a very hokey movie. But they were doing combat. It was like gladiators. And they fought out on this tree that had fallen across a big gorge. And the camera showed down, you know, and it was very scary. And they, you know, they fought with their swords. And finally, the good guy knocked the bad guy off. And I said, you know, that would be a heck of a wrestling match. So I started talking to people about it, and I couldn't get anybody to do it. So I said, well, shoot, I'll do it. You know, it'll draw a big house. And back in those days, I was very motivated to draw a sellout, so I just did it myself. I talked Don Green into it.
Oh, wow, so you actually came up with the concept of the scaffold match.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I was the promoter.
Oh, wow. Because whenever I think of a scaffold match, I think of, you know, Road Warriors and Midnight Express from the mid-'80s.
This was long before then.
Right, yeah.
The first one was in Louisville, Kentucky, and it was between me and Don Green.
Wow, that's interesting. I didn't know that. Now, you promoted several promotions in the Mid-South territory. Which one of them was your favorite to be with, or did you have a favorite?
Well, you know, we had different names at different times over the years, but it was really all the same promotion. You know, we were under the NWA banner, and then, you know, that organization began to deteriorate as territories and offices closed. And I could never get them to do business with me as far as Jerry Lawler and the title. So I, for a while, was CWA, and then I formed an alliance with Vern Gagne at AWA, and then we became USWA when I bought the Von Erichs world-class territory. And we branched out. We became USWA.
Okay.
So it was always the same promotion.
So the same territory, the name just changed a few times, is what you're saying.
Yeah, we just, you know, when we took over Dallas, we spread out our wings away. But it was still the same promotion.
Okay, now, you were speaking about Jerry Lawler a few minutes ago. And I just wanted to get your feelings on Jerry Lawler. And, you know, he's had a lot of legal issues over the years. Do you feel he was targeted because of his notoriety and his fame in the Memphis area?
Yeah, and you know, I can figure out why I'm having such trouble hearing. But Jerry Lawler, I consider, and if I didn't hear your question right, just interrupt me. I consider the most talented individual that I ever worked with. And I worked with some of the great ones. Everything from Hogan to Sting to Ultimate Warrior to Randy Savage. And Jerry, to me, of that group, had the most all-around talent. He could have a match in the ring with a broomstick. You could give him 3 bullet points, and he would go out and give an interview that sold out the Mid-South Coliseum or Louisville Gardens or the Evansville Coliseum or you know, the Nashville Fairgrounds Coliseum Arena. He was money when he got on the microphone. And then he could back it up with a great match so that I could, you know, I could book returns for a month. And that's how I felt then when I was booking it, and now in retrospect, you know, that's how I feel. Now, there were a lot of great, great talents, but if you had to make a list, he would be at the top of my list.
Okay, now, speaking of Jerry Lawler, one of the most famous feuds in the history of the wrestling business was a feud Jerry Lawler had with the late Andy Kaufman in the Memphis area. Do you have any memories of the late Andy Kaufman you'd like to share?
No, other than that little program has taken on a life of its own. And the truth of the matter is that, you know, it was a little novelty promotion that we did here in the territory. But, you know, Andy was well-connected, and so him getting on the David Letterman show, it took on a life of its own, but it was, you know, it was just a novelty thing. I did the same thing with Joe Louis, and different people throughout the years. We would try to rub shoulders with people that were stars in things other than wrestling. And but Andy is a swell guy. He loved the wrestling business with a passion that those of us who have spent our whole lifetime in it have. It was always a dream of his to be in the wrestling business, and he was appreciative that we gave him that opportunity. And of course, I was appreciative that the content of his character was such that he loved the business and was good at it.
Okay, now, who do you feel are some of the most overrated and alternatively some of the more underrated wrestlers that have worked for you over the years?
Oh, gee, I don't know. You know, I look at talent a lot different than I guess most people do. Just about everybody can play themselves. Hulk Hogan plays Hulk Hogan. Or maybe I said Terry Bollea plays Hulk Hogan, because he's playing himself. Dusty Rhodes is Dusty Rhodes, and Ric Flair is Ric Flair, and Jerry Lawler is Jerry Lawler. Most wrestlers that are superstars play themselves. And with rare exceptions. And one of those exceptions is a guy named Handsome Jimmy Valiant. I don't know if you ever heard of him. But Jimmy is nothing, and I mean doesn't resemble his character that he plays so well in the ring. Jimmy is an introverted, quiet, easygoing, bashful guy. But he's able to walk through the curtain and become the boogie-woogie man. It's the damnedest thing I ever saw in 40 years in this business. So, I guess Jimmy is, you know, if Jimmy had been in the movies, he would have played a dozen different roles, because he can truly play a role. All the other great wrestlers just play themselves. And that's good.
Now, we actually have another caller this time. The caller's from the 978. Caller, you're on the air with Jerry Jarrett. Go ahead with your question.
Hey, JT. I'm sorry. It's Mark again. Hi, Mr. Jarrett. I called in a few minutes ago. I didn't want to hog up too much time, but every once in a while I get to spend time with the Iron Sheik, and he tells me stories about back in the 70s, I'd imagine probably the mid-70s, that Elvis Presley used to come down to the Coliseum, I believe, and to watch some of the matches, and he actually told me a story one time about him, Jerry Jarrett, and a few of the other boys. Jerry Lawler and a few of the other boys actually were invited back to Graceland to hang out with Elvis Presley and such. Do you have any kind of cool stories or any recollection of Elvis Presley coming to the wrestling shows?
Yeah, that was not at the Mid-South Coliseum. The wrestling used to be held at Cook Convention Center.
Okay.
And that's when I first broke into the business. And at Cook Convention Center, there was a stage, and there was a back theater. In other words, the stage was kind of in the middle. And Elvis was a wrestling fan, and he would come and on occasion, two or three times, and sit back there in the dark and look across the stage out into the arena. I met Red and some of his crew. I met him. And what was funny at the time is I don't guess any of us thought anything about it. I mean, you know, here's a rock and roller that likes wrestling, and a lot of them did. I mean, in Nashville, you know, Fargo was buddies and card-playing buddies and gambling buddies and drinking buddies and who knows what else kind of buddies with about everybody that was in the business. But, yes, as far as going back to Graceland and all that, I don't know. I never went. I can't say they did or didn't. But I can say, because I met him, that he came to the Cook Convention Center on two or three occasions.
Right, cool, thanks.
But so did Muhammad Ali.
Oh, great. Right, yeah. Thanks again, Mr. Jarrett.
Okay.
All right, now, Mr. Jarrett, this is JT again. I have another question for you. Do you have any memories of the recently departed Skandar Akbar?
Yes, yes. When I bought the World Class promotion, Skandar was out there. And, you know, when you're the new kid coming in on the block, it's real easy to go through a, I don't know what's the term I'd use that's politically correct, but it's, you know, it's the bullshit period where, you know, people tell you the way they want the world to be and not the way it really is. And Skandar Akbar was a great help to me during this difficult time of my life, and he really helped point out to me this guy has talent and this guy will BS you, and this guy's got a coke problem, and this guy does this, and he made the transition because, I mean, it was dead. It was in bankruptcy. And it took us, thanks to Skandar, leading and pushing me in the right direction. I think we had our first full house in like 8 weeks from bankruptcy. And Skandar, of course, was a tremendous talent as a manager. But he was one of the real decent people in this business. Really first class.
We actually did a tribute radio show not too long ago for him. Now, you got to work with also the late Owen Hart. Do you have any memories of working with him at all?
Yeah. Owen was a prince of a guy. The whole Hart family, you know. I knew Stu Hart from the NWA days. And, you know, I knew the whole family, and so it was just, you know, it was a pleasure working with them. I got to work with both Brett and Owen when I was at WWE, and we did the Cain and Abel program that, you know, they pulled off the two brothers. Just, it was magic. And I think really that program with Owen helped establish Brett and contributed to him being the star that he turned out to be.
Now, you were, of course, the co-founder of TNA. What was the initial concept behind the company?
You know, that is a real complicated story that probably would take a book to fully explain it. I had a concept, and Jeff, I later discovered, had a very, very different concept. And that's what led to a lot of our problems and ultimately led to me getting out of the business. An investment group in Boston was going to put up $70 million for me to buy WCW. And I felt like that it could make a lot of money and be turned around really quicker than World Class was turned around. And as everybody knows the story, that didn't happen. They folded the company. Vince bought the library, and it ceased to be. I did some extensive research in that period, and I knew the numbers backwards and forwards at the rating. And when WCW closed, they had a consistent 3.2 television rating. Consistent. Vince McMahon, on average, now I know WCW beat them for 18 weeks or something, months or whatever. But overall, Vince had about 3 tenths of a rating point higher than WCW. So the last week that both shows ran, they had a combined 7 rating. The week after, Vince had almost a 7. The week after that, Vince went back to his 3.4 rating, and the WCW fans disappeared, just vanished. So I know that the aliens didn't come down in spaceship and suck up all the old-school wrestling fans or the WCW fans. So I knew they were still out there. And most people that you talk to, and I'm just ask you, how many people do you run into that say, "I wish wrestling was the way it used to be"?
I hear it all the time.
Do you ever?
Workers.
Okay. My philosophy with TNA was that we would try to capture with believable wrestling, and believable, it's really wrestling that allows the fan to suspend their disbelief for an hour and a half or 2 hours. And so that was my goal, that was my motivation for getting back in the business. And unfortunately, and I didn't realize this till after the fact, Jeff was greatly influenced even from the time we conceived the company by Vince Russo. And Vince Russo wanted to be WWE. Of course, he didn't have the money, didn't have the resources, and didn't have Vince McMahon, so he couldn't be it. But my goal was to have a reincarnation of the old school WCW wrestling. Now, a lot of people mistake WCW in the last dying throes. I'm not talking about that. I'm talking about the WCW before Russo and all that era went down there. I'm talking about back when, and I can't remember the years, but the original WCW, from the time Jimmy Crockett sold it to Turner until, say, the pre-Bischoff era.
Yeah, I know what you're talking about.
And that didn't happen. I believe with all of my heart that because I cannot go anywhere, that people don't come up and say to me, I know you're not with TNA anymore. Do you ever wish for the wrestling that used to be in Memphis? I said, of course I do. That was my passion. I believe that any time there is great demand for a product, that somebody, somewhere, will feel that demand. And I think that there will be somebody start a wrestling company, and I think they'll be successful. And maybe that's just wishful thinking, but I don't think so.
I don't think it's wishful thinking at all. I mean,
no, I believe that someday, because for one thing, the old school wrestling is very much alive. All you have to do is go out to a dozen independent matches and see. I went to a wrestling match that a fellow put on here in Nashville. And he only had, it's a little bitty building, and he only had 200 fans in the building. And the guys, and I don't mean this derogatory, but they did not look like, I mean, they wouldn't even get a dark match at TNA or WWE. They didn't have the physiques, they didn't have the looks. All they could do was wrestle. And they went out there, and the people stood up for 2 hours and did not sit down, screaming. And I have a hearing aid to help me hear. I had to take it off and turn it off. I mean, this little building they were in, 200 people, and they screamed their lungs out for 2 hours. And I thought, that's the way it used to be in Memphis. And it's still that way. We drew 10,000 people and they got 200. But if somebody gets this exposed, they can have 2,000 and then maybe 10,000.
Now, Jerry, what do you feel has been TNA's biggest accomplishment thus far?
What did I feel? What?
What do you feel has been TNA's biggest accomplishment so far?
Longevity. They're still alive. I don't think that they have, I don't know of, and, I've gone for so long and hadn't even watched it, so it's really hard for me to pass judgment. But when I was there, we developed some guys like AJ Styles and Loki and Jerry Lynn, and they became you know, box office nationally known talent. And I don't know that they've built anybody since then, have they?
No, not really. They're mostly bringing in the ex-WWE stars at this point.
Well, but I mean, you know, whatever notoriety they have, Vince did that. I'm talking about taking an unknown wrestler and turning him into a box office star. Do you know of any? I don't know.
No,
I mean, I'm seriously asking.
No, they haven't really done a lot of the developing stars since the time where you were there and those guys were increased. Actually, you mentioned Loki, and he recently he is now in WWE. What are your thoughts on that?
He is in WWE.
Yes.
Yeah, I loved him from the first time I saw him. He is a tough kid, a great wrestler, and a decent human being. I really like him.
Garrett, great. Now, a lot of people actually say that you helped them get signed to WWE based on a lot of the guidance you gave them when they were coming up to the business. What do you feel, or who do you feel that you've helped most in their career to try and develop?
Oh, I don't know. Just about everybody that came through Memphis. I can go back and, you know, you point to people like Hogan and Sting and Ultimate Warrior and Randy Savage, Jerry Lawler, Coco Ware, Flyboy Frazier. I don't know. I mean, it can just go on and on and on. The Moondogs, for a while there, it was everybody that was on the WWE roster.
Is there anyone that you looked at in Memphis and looked at them and said to yourself, I don't think they have it, and they turned out to be a pretty big success in the wrestling business? Has there ever been a situation like that?
Oh, absolutely. Sting and Ultimate Warrior came to California. There was four of them originally, and two of them, you know, went home. They didn't have the perseverance to stick it out. But those two stayed. One night we was at the back of the Mid-South Coliseum, and Steve walked over to me, and he said, Mr. Jared, do you think we're going to make it in this business? And I said, well, you've got a long way to go. And he said, no, be honest with us. Do you think we're going to make it? And I said, well, if you were my son, I'd tell you to go back to California and get a real job. No, I don't think you're going to make it. and of course, you know the story. Sting went on to be one of the biggest stars the business has ever known. Ultimate Warrior. He was a big star for a little while.
Yeah, for a little while. Now, back to TNA. Earlier this year, TNA went head-to-head with WWE on Monday nights. They actually kind of hurt themselves in the ratings in the process. Now, there are two schools of thought on this. One of them, which is actually the one that I subscribe to, is that they should have tried to stay kind of without competing and sort of use what brought them there. You know, a lot of the X Division things that really that you promoted when you were with TNA. But it seems like they really want to just compete with WWE and try to take them over. What are your thoughts on this? Because it really did turn out that their ratings have gotten and stayed lower since that failed incident.
Well, if I had have made a promotional blunder to that magnitude, I would go to South America to never be seen again. I mean, I can't even comprehend that they sat down and listened to Bischoff and Hogan and let them talk them in to that. I mean, it made a laughing stock out of him. You're being nice saying, you know, it didn't work. I mean, it was the war that nobody came to. And it's insane. It's beyond being stupid. It's just insane. Why would you pick a fight with a giant? And it's crazy. And to add insult to injury, I did follow during that time just because I was amazed. To add insult to injury, Vince didn't even react to it. Did you notice that? He didn't do anything. If anything, he downplayed his cards.
Right.
And isn't that what you saw?
Yeah, because their shows, especially, it was really odd because that was also one of their biggest times of the year for WWE, because it was while they were leading up to WrestleMania, and their shows were actually pretty subpar during that time.
Yeah, that's what I mean. So that, you know, Vince, I'm sure, laughed at it. I don't know. I can't imagine the blunder. It hurts me because I really worry about Jeff keeping a source of income.
Right. Now we have a caller calling in. So, caller from the 503, you're on the air with Jerry Jarrett.
Good evening, guys. How you doing?
Good. How are you?
Hello?
Yes, sir. You are on the air.
My question for Jerry was, what is one of the biggest problems that he sees with the world of professional wrestling today?
What do I see as the biggest problem?
Yeah, just to name a few. What is your humble opinion?
Yes, well, if you took and abolished college football, it's not hard to visualize that the NFL would be lacking. And if you don't see it as much because there's only WWE really that's out there presenting a product. And TNA on a much, much smaller level. But if you had wrestling to the degree and the number of events that were going on when the territory system was in, I mean, everybody would go belly up because of talent. Now, I am amazed and have no idea where all this independent talent has come from. I guess it's they just get out there and wrestle and for gas money or for free and because they love the business and they've watched old tapes. I don't know how to account for it. But I do know that I was amazed at TNA that I would show up to the arena and there would be 20 wrestlers rehearsing in the ring. And I was just astounded. I couldn't imagine rehearsing wrestling. And Jeff explained to me, he said, you know, the days of ring generals and people knowing what they're doing out there are long gone. That's dead. Nobody does it anymore. They have to rehearse the moves or they don't know how to have a match. And the reason for that is they don't have the feeder system that the territories produce these wrestlers by the hundreds. And so I really think that Vince does a great job from getting kids out of these schools and turning them into sports entertainment stars.
All right, thank you so much for calling in today, caller. Now, Jerry, Uncle Jimbo from our chat room has a question. He was asking, what do you feel is needed to launch another company to do what TNA was originally supposed to do to serve as a true alternative?
Well, you have to sit down, of course, and find an investor or a group of investors. You'd have to assemble a team that knew what they were doing and had some experience. And you would have to produce a pilot product, and sell it to a network. And once you did those steps, you just need to be real sure that the people that were in the creative end of the business had the same vision and passion that we're all talking about. You know, you don't want to... See, the one thing I really respect Vince McMahon about is he says, I'm not the wrestling business. I'm sports entertainment. So really, there is no company out there that's the wrestling business. I guess the closest to it is Ring of Honor. But it is them and all the other independents is the only real wrestling business that's alive. But I predict that there will be an investor and there will be a group of knowledgeable people come together, and they really will produce a product.
Okay. Now, we have another caller on the line. So, caller from the 978, you're on the air, Jerry. Jared?
Yeah, Jerry, it's me again. Yeah, three's a charm. You just meant the last thing you just said was that you predict that there will be a group of investors and there will be another promotion. Now, Ring of Honor has what they call pure wrestling. WWE has sports entertainment. TNA has much to the same degree sports entertainment, pro wrestling. Now with the fact that there's MMA out there, mixed martial arts, that is kind of influencing, I guess, in a way, the genre of pro wrestling, what is that next promotion? What are they going to have to offer? What are they going to have to offer to actually become viable in today's, you know, in the climate of today's wrestling, sports, entertainment scene? What do they have to do to make themselves stand out and to actually become a profitable company?
Okay. Believe it or not, and I've given that a lot of thought just lately. Did you watch the movie Rocky?
When I watched all the Rocky.
Apollo Creed?
Apollo.
Okay. That's one of my favorite movies of all time. And the reason it is I was, the first time I saw it, I was at the theater. And when Apollo Creed was just beating the dog out of Rocky, I thought, oh, man, this is going to be a terrible movie. He's going to get hurt. And then all of a sudden, Rocky started making a comeback, and everybody in the theater stood up and cheered like if their team had just won the World Championship, the Super Bowl. And that is the essence of old school wrestling. Because what that film did is allowed everybody in the theater to take their mind off of the fact that it was staged and there was lights and there was cuts and edits. They were able to suspend their disbelief that it was real. They were able to take that and put it over here on the shelf. And so, in the moment, the fight between Rocky and Apollo Creed was real. And that's what we did back in the old territory days. I don't think there was, of course there were a few, but I don't think there was many people that really thought that when Jerry Lawler pulled his strap down and went to beating up the big giant that had just beat him all over the ring, or when Dusty Rhodes did his big elbow drop, or when Hulk Hogan dropped his leg, I don't believe anybody really believed that that match was a shoot. I think they were able to suspend disbelief. Does that make any sense to you?
Absolutely it does. In fact, I wanted to ask you, what is the last professional wrestling match that you watched? For me, it was Ric Flair versus Shawn Michaels at WrestleMania 24, I believe. But for you, what is the last pro wrestling match that you watched where you actually saw, you of course, you being around the business forever, that you watched and you said, you know, oh, my God, you know, this is a story to tell. This is Rocky versus Apollo that conveyed that kind of emotion, that kind of passion, where you know it's predetermined, but you really just kind of left your inhibitions and you left and you kind of put your heart into it. What was the last wrestling match that you saw that gave you that kind of feeling?
Yeah, I really that's when I can relate to you. Do you remember, or did you remember hearing about Eddie Graham in the Florida promoter?
From Florida, yeah, Eddie Graham, of course.
Yeah. All right, Eddie was one of the great, great promoters of my time. And Eddie was the promoter of Jack Briscoe. And I was the promoter of Lawler. And we had a long program that built up to Jerry Lawler and Jack Briscoe. And I think there were 11,400 people at the Mid-South Coliseum. The fire marshal was screaming at me. But anyway, it was packed and it was electrical. And Eddie and I were standing at the back of the Mid-South Coliseum watching the match. And I got emotional and started crying. So I was kind of embarrassed that, you know, us macho wrestling promoters are not supposed to, you know, men aren't supposed to cry anyway. And I was caught up with emotion, and so I looked over and here is big tears running down Eddie Graham's face.
So as a credit to the, I'm sorry, but as a credit to both of the guys in the ring with that build up and to have two people who ultimately know, you know, that it's what's going to happen. They were, you know, that's such a credit. Now, like you said, you don't see guys like that build this, you know, that kind of emotion. And you saw that, and as a promoter, as, you know, gilded as you are in the wrestling business, that is definitely a lost talent because you can see it in the movies with directors directing these people. And I would totally love to see that again in pro wrestling on pay-per-view. Again, the last thing I saw that was when Shawn Michaels was crying his eyes out. The film, you know, they did a close-up and he melted. I'm sorry, I love you, and he kicked Ric Flair. We need more of that.
Yes. Well, see, Shawn is one of the last of the great wrestlers. And he knows how to have a match. And you know what happens to a talent when you're in the ring? They go to believing it, too. And that's the factor that makes a good match become a great, memorable match. The talent goes to believing it himself. I mean, you know, it's really, really hard. In the movies, they use teardrops and onions and everything else to make somebody cry. It's really hard for a wrestler to cry unless he's actually feeling the emotion. And I'm sure Shawn felt that emotion. I'm sure that something that Shawn was able to, in the moment, make it become real to him. And, you know, that's what I love about this business, and that's what I so miss about it. And I really hope that it will come back one day.
Okay, Mark, thank you so much for calling in tonight. Now, Jerry, we received another question in our chat room. DJ Kevin Lee wanted your opinion on what you feel is the best gimmick ever in the wrestling business.
Kamala, the Ugandan giant.
If I'm not mistaken, you guys created him in Memphis, is that right?
Yes. I mean, and naturally I'm going to, be self-serving because I did it. But what I know is that Sugar Bear Harris was a very, very limited wrestler. He absolutely could not throw a punch. I mean, it was horrible. It was the worst punch that I'd ever seen. And so I told him, I said, what you have going for you is your size and And he looked at me and he said, nothing else? I said, no, you're horrible at everything else. You can't make an interview. And Kamala drew sellout business everywhere he went because he took my advice and never threw a punch his entire career. He would chop, slap, didn't try to wrestle, just fought. And that takes charisma to draw money when you can't wrestle. Did you ever see Kamala?
Oh, yeah, I saw him plenty of times. And everything you're saying is totally right, something I always thought about him.
Yeah. The original Sheik was a great talent. The Iron Sheik, Ali Vasari, my friend, was a great gimmick.
Another question in our chat room from Uncle Jimbo. He just wanted to get your thoughts on, if you had any thoughts on Bryan Danielson.
Who?
Bryan Danielson, who's one of the hot young
guys coming up. Oh, yes. I think he's a terrific talent. You know, I don't know him personally, but I've seen a couple of his matches.
Okay, now, back to what we were talking about earlier with TNA. What are your thoughts on Dixie Carter, both as a person and her management style?
Oh, I'll pass on that.
I'm definitely no Dixie Carter supporter, so.
My mama told me if you can't say something good about somebody, don't say anything at all.
Okay. You sure you don't want to say anything? That's open forum here.
No, I mean, you know, I don't, what is there to say? I don't like anything about Dixie's business management style. I don't think she's has a clue what this business is about. And I don't really know her as a person. So my opinion is strictly, and I want to make that clear, is strictly from observing her up close when I was there and from a distance in business. I'm sure she's a fine mother, a fine person, a fine wife, a fine daughter. But I just don't know. I mean, you know, I don't know her. We were never social friends.
So you never really worked really closely with her during your time in TNA?
No.
Okay, that's the impression you had.
No.
You know, my general feeling is that, you know, with her position, her being running a company with the publicity that it does, you know, all the time she spends on the Twitter and the Facebook and those kind of letting everyone know what's happening behind the scenes, you know, that's kind of letting everyone in a little bit too much is my general opinion on that.
That's getting into the minutia of it. I don't like her, the big picture business. So, I mean, I don't, if I don't get past there, how do I get to whether she writes on Twitter or not?
Right, okay. Now, do you have any thoughts you'd like to share on with Jeff Jarrett so far as how he's running the business? And, you know, do you still have a good relationship with him?
Oh, no, we don't. We haven't talked since I left TNA. We don't have any relationship. And I don't know what his position is there. I don't have a clue.
Okay, that's because you were speaking of your granddaughters earlier, so I was...
Well, yes. Now, I have a relationship with them, I want them to have a fruitful, good life. You love your grandchildren. You're always concerned about their well-being, and so that's the reason I hope, you know, if TNA were to close the doors, I don't know where Jeff would make a living. You know, he's burned a bridge with Vince, and so, from that standpoint of how the girls would fare, is a concern of mine. Otherwise, you know, it doesn't matter to me.
Okay. Now, do you have a rib or a robe story that you'd like to share with our listeners?
Do I have what?
Like a rib or a robe story that you were part of or that you were aware of that you'd like to share with our listeners?
No, I don't know. Let me see. I've told so many of them. Fargo, that's kind of nasty. Well, anyway, you can use your imagination. Fargo had a coordination test for all the green guys that came into the business. And he would tell them, he would stand, and I would stand in front of him, and he'd draw a circle on the wall, and he would put his hand out behind him and point his finger and walk backwards, and I would say left, right, up, or down, and he could hit right in the middle of the circle that he'd drawn. And he and I had done this little routine 100 times. Inevitably, after about the third time, the green kid would say, "What are y'all doing?" And Fargo would say, "We're going to have the commissioners come tonight. He's going to give coordination tests." And the guy said, "Coordination tests?" And he said, "Yeah, you better be able to hit the target behind you from instructions. Because, you know, people talking in the ring, you can hurt somebody if you can't follow directions." Guy said, "No, kid, what if you fail it?" "Well, you don't get to wrestle." So Jackie would say, "Here, when I get through one more time, I'll let you practice." So the guy then would get up there, and he's real serious, and I'd be directing him. Barbara would drop his pants and bend over, and you can imagine what happened when the guy got to the wall. And it would embarrass him, and you know, all the other guys would laugh, telling what a goof he was. So, I mean, you know, it's just kind of like the initiation. That's one of them. There were, I mean, you know, it was just, the wrestling business is glamorous for about an hour a day. That's if you're working every night. The rest of the time is spent in cars or airports or airplanes and in a dressing room, putting your boots on and taking them off. For some people, the excitement is 10 minutes out in the ring or 10 minutes on camera. But the other 23 hours and 50 minutes of the wrestling business is kind of boring. So the guys end up with creative ways to entertain themselves. And that's the reason there's so many ribs in the business. Jokes, pranks, you know, everything from nailing a guy's shoes to a wooden floor. One guy used to buy handcuffs and would handcuff somebody's bag to a pipe in the dressing room. Crazy stuff.
Yeah, definitely. Now, we have one final question that was sent in to us from one of our listeners. And you want to know what's next for you. Will we see you inside the wrestling business and what's new outside? And do you have any projects in the work you'd like to tell the fans about?
Well, you know, never say never. I don't know. A few years ago I said never. It was a traumatic experience, my TNA experience, but that burnout has subsided. If the right opportunity came along again, I would I'd give it some real consideration if all the elements were right. I am working on two little projects. One is a reality show, and my partner is Mark Wolper with the Wolper Organization out in Los Angeles, and that's the reality thing that we're working on, television show. The other exciting thing that I'm working on is with John Corcoran in Boston. They're the fellows that put up the money to try to buy WCW. And I'm blessed that he likes me and the wrestling business. We're working on a portal for all of the independent wrestling, hopefully in the world. And in that portal would be chat rooms, message boards. For those fans who don't understand the difference between a portal and a website, WWE has a website and Facebook is a portal. A portal has diversity where somebody in England can immediately communicate with somebody in Philadelphia. And you can stream video and you can upload pictures. And so it's very, very interactive. So if there was a wrestling portal, this radio show could be accessed through that portal, and where you have your biggest job is getting people to know that you're out there, and so you can use Facebook and you can use this, that, and the other. If there was a portal where everybody came to for anything independent wrestling, you could be exposed to a lot more people. And so you would be able to upload your radio show at no charge, and then fans could tune in live while it was going on, or they could save it and listen to it later. Every independent television show, we're going to give them the opportunity to put it on, and in real time, people can watch it. So that's a real exciting project.
Okay, great. And yeah, when those get closer to completion, definitely let us know, and we'll be sure to plug that on our website.
Right now they're working on the technical end of it.
Right.
And it's quite an undertaking, and the reason it hasn't been done is very, very expensive. But that's what they're doing. As soon as they get the structure, we'll start seeking content.
Definitely. Now, Mr. Jared, I definitely want to thank you for coming on and being so candid with us.
Well, I've enjoyed it. I appreciate you fellas because you're straight shooters, and that harkens back to the old territory days where when somebody told you something, they did it. And y'all are straightforward and honest, and I appreciate that, and I'm glad I appreciate you having me on.
Well, again, we just want to thank you for coming on, and we definitely feel that if we're going to ask questions, definitely get some good, honest answers. And again, thank you so much for your time. What we're going to do is we're going to play a couple commercials, pay some bills, and then we'll come back and talk some wrestling news. So fans, stay tuned.
All right, bye-bye.
As always, fans out there, you want the best in wrestling news. This is the place to be, right here at Falls Count Radio. Thanks, guys. We'll talk to you later.
All right. Talk to you later. Fans, that's right.
Hey, this is Brother Devon from TNA Wrestling, and you're listening to Falls Count Radio. Oh, my brother, testify. Hey, this is Brother Devon from TNA. Hey, this is Brother Devon from TNA Wrestling. And you know something? When you're out there and you're thinking about choosing a wrestling school that really benefits you, that you want to see progress, and at the end of the day, you're going to feel happy about what you're doing, well, Team 3 Academy is just the place. Team 3 Academy offers you everything that you could possibly want in a wrestling school. It offers you old school rules with the new school tools. Team 3 Academy will offer you the best there is in teaching how to do professional wrestling the right way, the way it should be taught. Team 3 Academy also gives you the knowledge of behind the scenes and how to take care of yourself, conduct yourself in and out of the ring. Team 3 Academy at team3academy.com. So if you've always been a wrestling fan all your life, you've always said, I can do that, then you owe it to yourself to come on down and have Bubba Ray and ourselves train you. Train you in the way that professional wrestling should be taught the right way. Again, Team 3D Academy offers you a variety of things. Team 3D Academy will give you the knowledge that you need to make you either TNA or WWE. Be sure to contact us. Be sure to make it happen for you. Testify.
All right, ladies and gentlemen, welcome back to Falls Count Radio. I want to welcome back to the air with me, as always, my co-host Andrew Carluck. Man, that was a great interview with Jerry Jarrett, very straightforward, humble, and I'd have to say a very old-school, classy guy.
Right, yeah, a lot of guys these days, they'd be kind of afraid to make some of the comments that he did, simply for fear of being blacklisted in the industry, but he definitely didn't have any of those issues.
No, not at all. I do believe we still have a caller on the line with us. We are going to get into a pro wrestling discussion, so if you want to join in, you can. Caller from the 918, I do want to welcome you to the line. Caller from 918, you there?
Yes, I'm here.
How are you doing?
I am doing great. How are you doing?
I am doing wonderful. So we are doing some pro wrestling discussion. Is there anything on your mind that you want us to talk about?
Actually, yes. It's the fact of the ratings these days. I mean, it's WWE versus TNA. And in my opinion, you know, I've watched when I'm not much of a TNA fan. I will be first to admit. And I actually sat down and watched the whole effing show a while back, and I got to tell you, I was amazed. And I watch shows like, you know, Raw and SmackDown, and they've got the whole Nexus thing angle going on now, and I don't know, it just seems like, to me, it's starting to get boring really fast. And I was just wondering if there's anybody out there that, you know, feels the same way that I do.
You know, honestly, I was a big TNA fan when it was back in the Asylum days, and when it was actually good, when they were actually giving pushes to the guys that deserved it, like AJ Styles and, you know, the Sonny Siakis and the guys back then. But it is watered down now. As far as the ratings go, you know, it kind of sucks because, what goes on TV also affects the independent wrestling scene. So with the ratings down on TV, it's also affecting the draws at indie shows. So it does suck in that aspect as well. Now, Andrew, you want to go ahead and answer that?
Yeah, well, as we all know, I'm definitely not a TNA fan by any stretch of the imagination. So far as you're talking about with the ratings and everything, we were talking with Jerry earlier about the ratings as a result of TNA going to Monday nights. Now, you know, I did some research, and I think I may have talked about this on the show recently as well, but I'm going to go ahead and repeat myself. Now, I did some really detailed research at the ratings, because I've always followed ratings, and the highest rating that TNA has ever received was 1.45. Now, that was on the Monday night, January 4th show, and that also, remember, that was a three-hour show. Prior to that, they were pulling in 1.1s, 1.2s, which were pretty decent ratings for them. Right now, they would pretty much kill for that, because after that, they were pulling in 0.8, 0.9, the occasional 1.0. The only time the ratings spiked was when the ECW originals started coming in. And, you know, once fans realized that these guys were just going to continue to get jobbed out every single week, those ratings kind of started to go back down a little bit. Haven't really held steady. Now, that 1.45, if you look back, when ECW, the original ECW, was on Spike TV, which was then TNN, when they were removed from the network, they were actually one of the top-rated shows on that network. They pulled in around 1.8. And now you look at that, and TNA is considered like the flagship show for Spike TV, and their ratings are a little bit more than half of that. Which is kind of insane, because if you remember all the mess that went on with ECW back then. But, you know, also WCW, Jerry was talking earlier that their average ratings, even at the end, was 3.2, which, you know, and especially because you have a lot of fans who want to say, you know, TNA now is better than the end of WCW. Well, the viewership isn't really reflecting that.
Yeah. Well, I don't know, from a fan's perspective, I look at it as though I was completely impressed, and, you know, I look at the WWE roster as opposed to the TNA roster now, and I see so much great talent that, you know, I feel as a fan that they're, you know, WWE, they're missing out. And, you know, in my opinion, I see more and more TNA fans these days than I do WWE. I mean, I don't know. It's just my opinion.
Right. No, that's definitely a good opinion. The only issue that I'm having right now is they're not, and we were talking about this with Jerry earlier as well, they're not really elevating a lot of people. Most of the people that are getting the main event pushes are former WWE wrestlers. There's not really a lot of guys being elevated. You know, and at this point, really, AJ Styles, who's, you know, they're one of their top stars from the beginning. He's been there from the very first show. You know, he's also, as he's getting older, he's not doing all the crazy things that kind of got him where he is. And, you know, to me, he's not really a main event anymore. He's like a high mid-card, not really worthy of the main event. But outside of that, you know, they brought in Jeff Hardy. They brought in Ken Anderson. They brought in Rob Van Dam. All of these guys made their names in WWE. You go to a show and you talk about Rob Van Dam, they're going to talk either ECW or WWE. No one's going to talk about TNA. They're not really building any stars is my issue, really.
Yeah. Well, TNA started off with so many great talents as well. Like you said, AJ Styles. I'm a huge AJ Styles fan. You know, if I watch a show, it's only because of him. And, of course, I don't know if you consider Jeff Hardy a WWE or a TNA because he's back and forth. So,
well, I look at it like this. I'm sorry for interrupting you, but I look at it like this. If Jeff Hardy was not in WWE, if he had never been in WWE, if, let's say, he had come up through the independents and then went to TNA when they started and has been with TNA, right now you go to a wrestling show and show a picture of him, 10 out of 10 people know who Jeff Hardy is, and if you ask him about his best match, it would be a WWE match. It would be, how do you know him? From WWE. I dare say walk up to someone at a WWE show who's never watched TNA and doesn't like TNA, you'll get the occasional person who doesn't even know that he's there.
That's very true. That is very true. But I don't know. It's, like I was saying, though, it's just my opinion. I see more now, especially since Eric Bischoff, you know, has joined TNA rankings. I see more now of a TNA that's kind of resembling the way WWE Raw used to be. I mean, anymore, I see a lot of plasticness as far as WWE is concerned.
Right, and it's kind of the whole industry is in a downtime right now. And like JT said earlier, that's hurting the independents as well. Even Ring of Honor, which is essentially an independent, I went to a Ring of Honor show a few weeks ago, and there was maybe 100 people there. It's really not not a lot there. So, you know, that's an issue. But did you have any further thoughts?
No, that was it.
Okay. Well, thanks for calling in tonight, and you have a good evening.
You too.
All right. Now, we have another caller on the line.
Yeah, we do, as a matter of fact. I do believe it's from the 206. Caller from the 206, you're on the air on False Count Radio.
Hey, how's it going? My name is Nathaniel Luca from Seattle. I actually thought I would bring something up with you guys. Did any of you guys see the last Ring of Honor pay-per-view?
I saw it. I don't know if JT did.
I actually did not get to see it. I was up at a funeral that day.
I was really disappointed. I hadn't seen a Ring of Honor show in at least a year, I guess. And I felt like the booking was more, the best way to describe it would be like TNA-ish than I'd ever seen at a Zara.
I'm actually really glad you said that, because I totally agree with you. I thought it was one of the worst Ring of Honor shows I've ever seen, and I'm not a huge Ring of Honor guy to begin with. You know, I was kind of looking forward to the Shelton Benjamin and Charlie Haas versus the Kings of Wrestling match, which is odd, because when someone told me that the world's greatest tag team was reuniting, I thought they were talking about Arn Anderson and Tully Blanchard, and then I found out it was them. But in all seriousness, I really thought that was a terrible match. There was way too many false finishes. That match should have ended 5 minutes before it did. It was just very slow. The whole event was slow. The crowd was really dead for it. Did you notice that? The crowd was dead.
Yeah, that's actually really interesting, because I felt like the match was too short. You know, the marquee matches, RFA Stars versus XWWE guys, 15 minutes just seemed kind of unreasonable to give it.
Right.
If anything, the biggest thing that ruined the match for me was the finish with them holding the ROH belts, even though they didn't win the match.
Yeah, it was just really odd, because you don't know if they're a one-shot deal. You don't know if they're sticking around. I'm always of the opinion, and, you know, our sister show Wrestling Soup, I was guest hosting on that the day that Shelton Benjamin and I think Mickey James and Jimmy Wang Yang, they all got released from WWE the same day.
Yeah.
So we had a conversation with Missionary and his co-host Joey Numbers, and Joey and I had this conversation that Shelton Benjamin, and for that extent, everyone who was released that day, you know, never drew a dime in the business. And, you know, I totally agreed with him on that. And, you know, I actually caught a little bit of heat for that. And, you know, the reason I say that, that he never drew a dime is because I can't think of a single wrestling fan I know that told me, I bought a ticket to see Shelton Benjamin. I bought a pay-per-view to see Shelton Benjamin. I mean, it doesn't happen. You know, he didn't put a butt in a seat. Is he a great wrestler? Absolutely. He's at his best when he's with Charlie Haas. But, and it's also, to me, it's just a point where some people don't work well together, and I just don't think that they're great workers, both of them. The Kings of Wrestling are, but together, they're not. So, you know, it was a good try. I would prefer to see them take on someone with a different style. Like, I think I would enjoy seeing them versus the Briscoes.
Oh, absolutely. That match should have definitely happened over Kings of Wrestling.
Right.
You know, after
what did you think of now, let me ask you something. What did you think of the main event? Because I thought it was really stale. Although, because Tyler Black was leaving, it seems like it was the only time the crowd got hot during the event.
I think Tyler Black's biggest problem is that he's always been really fluid in the ring, but his actual storytelling and psychology have always kind of lacked something. He's always needed to be carried by people who knew what they were doing. And
I've always thought he was kind of overrated, to be honest with you.
Honestly, I just didn't get it. Like, you had Homicide coming back out in New York on 11, and I just thought it was a really dumb use of him.
He probably should have been in the match. He probably should have showed up at the beginning and had, like, an impromptu match because, you know, no one's seen him in a while, and, you know, I thought he was still climbing that cage from January 4th because it took him a long time. let me ask you something, because you sound like you're a pretty big Ring of Honor fan. You know most of the guys. How do you think Tyler Black will fare in WWE? Because I personally don't think it'll be that well. I think he'll struggle to get out of Florida. If they have a fourth season of NXT, he'll probably be on that. But, you know, I don't see him being a big success in WWE.
Well, you know, WWE's always had a history of pushing people based on their look, and I wouldn't be surprised in their mind if they were just like, well, the Hart has gone his way out, so let's just have another black-haired mid-card people. I just can't see him going past that at all. Maybe they don't like how well in his direction, but I don't know.
I can see him being saved by CM Punk, and that's probably as high as he'll go pretty much immediately, but of course, I mean, there's always room to grow. And, you know, look at someone like Michael McGillicuddy, Joe Hennig. He's been in their developmental for years. I mean, the guy's 30 years old, and he's just now getting ready to come up to the main roster. I've enjoyed watching Joe Hennig for years because, you know, I've seen him on indies, you know, watching the FCW show, things like that. So, I mean, I actually enjoy him quite a bit. But
So I've got a question for you, actually. Is I think after watching this last pay-per-view, ROH's status as number 3 wrestling company has never been, like, shakier before. I think somebody else could overtake ROH right now, especially if they keep making the same types of moves that they have been making.
You think they're in danger of, like, Dragon Gate taking them over, maybe?
I think so. I think Gabe Sapolsky is king of the press release. And he's also one of the better eyes of talent than a lot of people in wrestling right now. And he's working hard. Like, I think right now ROH is kind of in a position where a lot of their problems are all tied into each other, and they can't really solve them immediately.
I think you have something there.
I was going to say, the booking needs help, they need stars, and they need to figure out a different business model than selling DVDs. And all three of those things can't really be solved immediately.
You know, I definitely think there's something there, because if you look at Ring of Honor, really they were at their best when Gabe Sapolsky was pretty much running the show totally. Like, those couple
yeah.
years where Feinstein wasn't there, but Sapolsky was still there, that was probably
yeah.
some of the best times. That and beforehand, like before all of that. You know, my local cable company just recently started carrying the Ring of Honor pay-per-views, but, you know, in this case, I watched this one live. But on something else about the pay-per-view, you know, there was some other matches earlier on, the mid-card matches.
Yeah.
And I thought that match was with Carino and Steen.
Mm-hmm.
But it was really odd because, you know, it was just like Carino was the heel, but his son came out to help him. And you really tell me an audience is supposed to boo a 14-year-old kid?
Yeah, that was really a weird moment. I watched the pay-per-view with a bunch of buddies, and we all had our girlfriends and stuff, and that was just one of those moments when they were chanting "Kill the Kid" that was kind of funny, but mostly just saying that because the whole thing didn't make sense, and then we had a lot of girlfriends who were like, why do they want to kill the kid? And it wasn't that classy of a moment for wrestling.
Right, and, like, that's always been something, like, a problem. Like, one of the problems I always had with Ring of Honor was with some of the fans in attendance where, yeah, I don't know, it just seems like they want to be too much like an ECW crowd. That's something that would have happened in ECW in 1996. In fact, if I'm not mistaken, that chant actually came out during the whole thing with Raven and Sandman and Tyler Fullington.
Sure.
But, you know, it's just really, really odd with them. Like, they want to chant that this is awesome, like, before a match even starts. I think they actually did that during the tag team match. And,
they definitely
you know,
it seems like
the fans are more into chant. Yeah, it just seems like the fans are more into making those chants than actually watching and enjoying the match.
I think a good wrestling show has an interactive crowd, and, you know, and that crowd should be kind of tough on the product and, you know, chant "you fucked up" when, you know, when the wrestlers mess up. But at the same time, don't say chants that you saw from promotion. I think that's not very original. You know, form your own connection with the audience and have them make chants that only happen in your promotion.
Yeah, and, you know, I was a big Ring of Honor fan in the early days when you actually had to look hard to find them. And then,
yeah.
You know, the HDNet show started. And one of my other problems I'm having with the HDNet show is they're having matches that would be great matches if it took up the whole show or a good part of the show. But, you know, it wasn't that long ago they had, like, Steve Corino and Jerry Lynn, which would have been a really good match, but I don't know if they
Absolutely.
Edited it or if they just made it short, but it was like a 7-minute match. I would love to see a half-hour marathon with those two.
You know, it used to be that, you know, and I guess I'm outing myself as a Sapolsky mark there, but it used to be whenever ROH put out a press release that would read every single word and get really excited. And nowadays, it's like, I don't even pay attention. I don't care. And I can't stand watching the video wires that they do where they just give the entire roster like a 30-second promo. It's almost like going to a dog pound and watching all these puppies like bark at you like, please, please love me. And it's hard for me to watch. I just don't like it.
Yeah, unfortunately, that just seems to be the way the industry is from top to bottom these days. You know, every 10 to 15 years sort of goes through this. There's a few years where it's really bad. And, you know, as much as a lot of people don't like it for good reason, WWE, they set the pace. The fact that pretty much they're the top dog, so, you know, they don't need to do any more than they have to keep up. One of the problems that they're having is the reason why they're doing this G-rated show right now is they want to try to avoid any kind of controversy going on. Linda McMahon is running for Senate. They don't want to.
Yeah.
Like, I've seen some of the campaign ads,
oh,
and
yeah.
they're against her, they're pretty brutal because she was affiliated with WWE. It's funny just because I was recently in northern New York, and I was in New York, so I was still kind of seeing some of the Connecticut ads because a lot of the commuting. And, you know, her, like, on her ad, she's saying, look at all these jobs I've created in the state of Connecticut, all these, I don't want to turn this into a political thing because that's not how I am. But basically she's saying, look at all these things I've done, and using WWE as sort of the jumping off point for all the good things she's done. And then, you know, one of them actually, and they pulled it off really quickly, but they talk about the wellness policy, all these guys that are failing drug tests, and not by name, but sort of bringing up controversy. I think they even brought up the 1994 steroid scandal with Vince McMahon. So just the fact that she has been affiliated with WWE, they're using against her.
You know, I think it's pretty funny because all those campaign ads against her, they're almost all footage from the Russo era of WWE.
Right, exactly.
I mean, it just kind of says something about his writing and the product in general.
Right, yeah, exactly. And did you have anything else you wanted to mention tonight?
No, that was it. Thank you for discussing this.
No problem. Thanks for calling in. Have a great evening.
You too.
Man, we've had some great callers tonight on this broadcast. I got to, you know, send a thank you to everybody who's called in on this broadcast. And if you feel like calling in now, you can, 718-664-9835. Real quick, I do want to throw out some plugs. We'll play another commercial, and then we'll come back and promote the sponsors. Of course, this Friday, we're going to have a special False Count Radio episode, 8 p.m. Eastern, 5 p.m. Pacific Standard Time, current WWE superstar. She was supposed to be on NXT. We will be joined by Aloisa. She's going to be joining us for a special interview. For those of you that don't know, before she was in WWE, she was known as Isis the Amazon. She'll be joining us for a exclusive interview, and it looks like we're going to be getting some good information out of her. And, of course, this Saturday, you know, you've heard Jerry Jarrett tonight. Well, this Saturday we're going to be joined on the air by former USWA women's wrestler, Moondog Fifi. She's going to be joining us for an exclusive interview. And it's been confirmed today that next Saturday we're going to be joined on air by WWE Hall of Famer and member of the legendary Samoan family, one half of the Wild Samoans, Sika. That's right, ladies and gentlemen. Sika will be joining us live next Saturday for an exclusive interview. We'll be taking calls just like we did tonight and discussing your questions that you send in the chat room. But real quick, I do want to go ahead and throw out another plug. We're going to go to a quick commercial, and we'll be right back, fans. So just stay tuned for more False Count Radio.
Hey, listen up. This is the Pitbull, the original Extreme Pitbull. And I advise you to tune in to WrestleHustle.com.
This is former WWF ring announcer Michael Porter, and you're listening to False Count Radio.
Bud Light presents Real American Heroes.
Real American Heroes.
Today, we salute you, Mr. Pro Wrestling Wardrobe Designer.
Mr. Pro Wrestling Wardrobe Designer.
While lesser designers would shy away from putting 300-pound men in spandex, you embrace it.
Yes, you do.
Pushing fashion to its limits, literally, you pair tights with a cape, a leotard with a mask, leather boots with a thong.
Oh, looking good.
All understated ways of saying, I'm going to rip your head off and look fabulous doing it. So crack open an ice-cold Bud Light, Mr. Pro Wrestling Wardrobe Guy, because without you, a man crushing another man's head in his arms would just look silly.
Mr. Pro Wrestling Wardrobe Designer.
Bud Light Beer, Anheuser-Busch, St. Louis, Missouri.
All right, we're back here on False Count Radio. We do have another call, but before we go ahead and get to that, I want to throw out a couple of plugs. You know, of course, we've got to throw out a plug for Kayfabe Collectibles. That's stores.ebay.com/kayfabe-collectibles. They are doing a fundraiser where they are going to be auctioning off some wrestling autograph photos with all the money going to fallen independent professional wrestler
Lee Donald Rogue Miller Jr.'s family. Of course, he passed away last month, and there's bills for over $5,000 that they are trying to pay and are almost in debt because of it, so we are going to be helping them with the fundraiser. Also got to plug WrestleHustle.com. And, Andrew, I'm going to go ahead and let you give your favorite plug of all time. So go ahead, man.
All right. So, yeah, we're good friends with the people over at Gimmicks Wrestling Tees. They have some really great shirts, and actually they have a couple of new ones. So, you know, definitely go check them out. At they're on, first of all, they're on Twitter at Gimmicks247. You can find them on the Internet at www.gimmicks with one M, wrestlingtees.bigcartel.com. You can also send them an email at gimmicks247 with one M at gmail.com. You know, so often these days you go to a wrestling show with a sign, and they'll take away your sign for inappropriate content or whatever. You know, they can't take a sign away, so fuck a sign, wear a T-shirt at Gimmicks Wrestling Tees, and definitely check out their recent line of T-shirts that just came out earlier this week. I also wanted to say, JT, just for all the fans out there, we're really starting to ramp up on our website at falsecountradio.com. So, you know, if anyone out there is looking to, you know, add some news on there, has some news, maybe wants to write the occasional column, you know, definitely let us know. You can contact me at my email, which is andrewkarluk, K-A-R-L-U-K, at verizon.net. You can also contact me on Facebook under my name, Andrew Karluk, or Twitter, which is also my name, Andrew Karluk. So if anyone has any information or wants to write something, definitely let us know and, you know, get some more information out there on our website.
Awesome, Andrew Karluk. Now, we do have another caller. Call from the 978. Welcome back to the air.
Hey, what's going on? It's Mark again. Yeah, I know it's four times again on the show, I guess. I'm a cold you just can't kick, but I really want to thank... yeah, no, it was kind of funny. I just want to thank JT for having me on. I've been talking to him on Twitter, and yes, I got JT in touch with Sika, and Sika is going to be on next week, and one of the things Sika is concerned about is he hasn't really been on the scene lately in terms of, you know, the wrestling convention and stuff. He wants to get back on that, but more importantly than that, Sika wants to talk about and bring awareness to people about how he can help people. Is that common?
What was that?
I'm sorry, I just heard a weird noise. I'm sorry, guys. Sound like someone's calling. Anyhow, so Sika wants to come in and talk about bringing awareness to the poverty that has been stricken his country of Samoa, and how a lot of people in the Pacific Islands, such as Tonga and Fiji and such, which people know about in professional wrestling, you know, Fiji, Jimmy Snuka, Tonga, Tom, and Haku, and how there's a lot of poverty down in those regions of the world, and Sika would love to bring attention to the fact that maybe if people are listening to False Count Radio, we can, you know, get the attention of some charities out there or such that we can really help the young people, the elderly people, the handicapped people of the Pacific Islands, and that's one of the things Sika is very passionate about. Of course, he'll talk to you guys all about, you know, professional wrestling and his career, as he has, you know, such a storied career. And I am so glad to help you guys out to get Sika on the program. And, hell, it's going to be a great show, man. It's going to be really good. And like I said, I have not had this much fun on a wrestling radio program in a long time. I appreciate you guys taking my calls. I had so much fun talking with Mr. Jarrett and JT, man. It was so great, man. I'm so glad that I got back in touch with you again
after a while. And, guys, you've got a great program going. I loved the Owen Hart segment that JT, I believe yourself, did. Shit, what was it? Whenever it was, I listened to it. Yeah, it's
the one Hart. Yeah.
And, man, it was tremendous. And I'm so happy to get back in touch with you guys. You guys got a great thing going. You know, I'll get you Seek on anyone else who I can come into contact with. I'll definitely put you guys all over and make sure that, you know, I can get you guys the best, you know, wrestling interviews and whatever. And I will be calling in again. I'm sorry that I called in so many times, but you guys were absolutely great, and I had a blast. Thank you, guys.
Thank you very much for joining us tonight, and thank you very much for your questions.
Take care, boys.
All right, take care. Man, you know, this has just been an explosive episode. You know, I can't help but thank everybody who's called in and has joined us in the chat room tonight. This episode will be up on youtube.com/falsecountradio, which is where we I've been uploading a lot of the past interviews that we've done here on the broadcast. If you didn't get a chance to listen to the Trent Acid Tribute Radio Show live, or if you didn't get a chance to check out the Owen Hart Tribute Show live, they are both up on the YouTube page currently, as well as some other various interviews that we have done over time. So I want to invite you to check that out, of course. And, of course, we are on Twitter as well, twitter.com/falsecountBTR. So if you're a Twitter fan, then definitely feel free to tweet us. Now, Andrew, is there anything you want to talk about, man?
Show, you know, Aloysia coming up Friday evening. You know, earlier this news, some pretty controversial news broke with her. So, you know, we had a lot of people listening tonight. We had a lot of people calling in tonight. I can only imagine, considering it's a current WWE employee, which we don't often get. You know, hopefully our chat room and phone lines will blow up for that.
I have a feeling they will. You know, I don't have very much more I want to talk about or cover. Do you have anything else, man, or do you just want to go ahead and wrap it up?
No, I think that about covers anything. I actually wanted to get the opportunity to talk about the Ring of Honor pay-per-view, and our caller from Seattle actually wanted to talk about that too, which was good because I know you didn't get the chance to see it, so I would have pretty much been talking to myself there.
Exactly. Unfortunately, I didn't get to see it. But, you know, I want to thank everybody who tuned in tonight. Of course, check out falsecountradio.com. If you're on Facebook, find us, False Count Radio. And, you know, we have a nice fan page there with over 2,400 fans on the page. You can talk wrestling with them, talk wrestling with us at all hours of the day and night. I am usually up, as is Andrew. So go ahead and post on the False Count Radio Facebook page. And just once again, you know, thank you all for tuning in. And, of course, check out WrestleHustle.com and Gimmicks Wrestling T-shirts. All right, fans, thank you very much for tuning in.
Hey, this is Brother D-Law from TNA Wrestling. And you know something? When you're out there and you're thinking about choosing a wrestling school that really benefits you, that you want to see progress, and at the end of the day, you're going to feel happy about what you're doing, well, Team 3 Academy is just the place. Team 3 Academy offers you everything that you could possibly want in a wrestling school. It offers you old school rules with the new school tools. Team 3 Academy will offer you the best there is in teaching how to do professional wrestling the right way, the way it should be taught. Team 3 Academy also gives you the knowledge of behind the scenes and how to take care of yourself, conduct yourself in and out of the ring. Team 3 Academy at team3academy.com. So if you've always been a wrestling fan all your life, you've always said, I could do that, then you owe it to yourself to come on down and have Bubba Ray and ourselves train you. Train you in the way that professional wrestling should be taught the right way. Again, Team 3D Academy offers you a variety of things. Team 3D Academy will give you the knowledge that you need to make it in either TNA or WWE. Be sure to contact us. Be sure to make it happen for you. Testify.
Bud Light presents Real American Heroes.
Music. Reality. Sometimes it's hard to tell the difference. But we as entertainers have a responsibility to these kids. Bye.
If I were to die murdered in cold blood tomorrow, would you feel sorry, show love, or would it matter? Could never be the leadoff batter if ain't shit for me to feed off. I'm seesaw battling, but there's way too much at stake for me to be fake. There's too much on my plate. I done came way too far in this game to turn and walk away and not say what I got to say. What the fuck you take me for? A joke? You smoking crack? Before I do that, I beg Mariah to take me back. I get up before I get down, run myself in the ground before I put some wax it out. I'm trying to smack this one out the park, 5,000 mark. Y'all steady trying to drown the shark. Ain't gonna do nothing but piss me off. Lid to the can of whip ass, just whip me off. See me leap out, pull a piece out. Fuck shooting, I'm just trying to knock his teeth out. Fuck with me now, bitch, to see you freestyle. Talk is cheap, motherfucker, if you really feeling frog asleep. Yo, Slim, you gon' let him get away with that? He try to play you, you can't let him skate with that. Man, I hate this crap, this ain't rap, this is crazy the way we act.
If so, you would've tried. The only way I'm leaving this bitch is suicide. I have died clinically. I ride back at my enemy's crib with Hennessy. Got drunk, then I finished it. I'm every nigga's favorite arch enemy. Physically fitted to be the most dangerous nigga with beef. I spark willingly with a Dillinger in the dark diligently. I'm not what you think. I appear to be fucked up, mentally endangered. I can't stay away from a razor. I just want my face in a paper. I wish a nigga had a grenade to squeeze tight to await neighbors for eight. I murder you, I danger how me turn into a madman. Son of Sam, bitch, I'm surgical, I'm allergic to dying. You think not, you got balls, we can see how large. When I'm you, I was out,
we having a chillin'